We're doing Midrash Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. We're up to page Kuf Mem Dalit in the what edition is that? Eshkol edition or Shaila Mora edition or page Shin Mem Dalit in the Zichron Aaron edition. And we're in the middle of the 38th chapter, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. We're towards the end. And he had discussed the Cheirem. The Cheirem is a halachic ostracization where the rabbis can basically declare a person should be severed from the Jewish people. And it's a very powerful form of a vow, a form of an oath that the rabbis can take, and basically they wish the person to drop dead. And our sages have on tradition that when the rabbis do this the way that the courts can, so then the person will either become impoverished or drop dead, one or the other. But he will be harmed if the rabbis put him in cherem. So the Midrash says, Teida lecha kama gadol koach hacherem. You want to know how powerful this cherem is? Bo ur'ei min ha-shvatim. Come, take a note from what the tribes did. Shekinu alaznut shel shevet Binyamin. Because when the tribe of Benjamin had something improper in their midst. Remember, there was this man traveling. He went to a hilltop. When he went, no one would take him in. Finally, one old man took him in, and then some youngsters from the hilltop surrounded the house, and they said, "We want to rape the man who came to your house." And the man was scared, and he threw out his concubine, and they raped her all night long until she dropped dead. And then the rest of Israel united, and they went to the tribe of Benjamin and said, "Give over the people who did that on the hilltop," even though there were no witnesses. Halachically, you couldn't execute anyone. There was no testimony. There was no court that sat and convened. But the Jewish people said, "Something so horrible that happened in our midst, something so immoral, we are going to kill them, and we have a right to do it, even though it does not fit into the halachic criterion." And they were in the right. And the tribe of Benjamin said, "There's no halacha that's backing you. It's our job to judge this. It happened in our tribe. We're not giving over these people. You have no witnesses." And the people of Israel said, "Well, if you're not giving them over, we're going to war." And there was civil war. And the first day, the 11 tribes attacked Benjamin, and they lost. And the second day, they attacked Benjamin, and they lost. And so the 11 tribes took a vow, and they made a pact, and they made a cherem that no one would give from their daughters and whoever didn't to the tribe of Benjamin, and whatever groupings among Israel they would discover did not join in this fight against Benjamin would be destroyed. And so the Midrash says, you want to know the power of the pact, the power of the cherem, look at the tribes. They went and they were zealous against the immoral activity that happened. Shekinu al aznut shel shevet Binyamin. They were zealous about that which occurred within the tribe of Benjamin. Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, so to speak, said to the 11 tribes, Kinetem al aznut shel shevet Binyamin. I see how zealous you are when it comes to immoral activity in the tribe of Benjamin. Velo kinetem al pesel micha. But how come when you had the tribe of Dan that took an idol in their midst in the north, that didn't bother you? No civil war, no emissaries, no unification of the people. You have a tribe of Dan going to the north to the Chatzbani, setting up an idol, pesel micha, and all of you are silent. How come your honor, you feel like it's improper in our midst, immoral activity? That doesn't bode well. But the fact that you have an idol, you have a whole tribe that has an idol in the north, that didn't bother you. How come, God says? And so, God held that against the Jewish people. He said, if you're so zealous, why weren't you zealous for my honor? Why weren't you zealous when a whole tribe went and started serving the idol of Micha up in the north? Pam lefichach. Therefore, Halguvem Bnei Binyamin Pam Rishonah Shniah. The first two times they went to war, they lost the war. Why'd they lose the war? Because God said, you expect me to be in your midst? Do you have a tribe that's doing idol worship? You're right, you're going to attack Benjamin. But you're wrong, because where were you all these years that the tribe of Dan had an idol in their midst? After the second day that they lost the battle against Benjamin, the people of Israel fasted and wept, and they fell before the ark, and they did great tshuva, and at that time, v'asu tshuva gdola, they did great tshuva, v'chalmu she'e kol Yisrael olim nachayin. They made a chayrim, they made a pact on that second day after they lost the second battle, and they said that anyone who doesn't join them will be wiped out. Anyone who doesn't join them in the tribe against Benjamin, it's as though they're agreeing that Benjamin's in the right in harboring these criminals. So the question is, what's the Midrash alluding to? Is the idea that they fell before the Ark indicative that they all accepted Hashem was the omnipotent one, even the tribe of Dan? You know, the Midrash is alluding to something here. How does that resolve the problem that they had the idol of Dan? So they all fell, and they did a great tshuva. Did that tshuva include reacting to the idol of Dan? It doesn't seem that way. And yet the question is, then why was God willing to forgo that at this point? And they took on a vow from young till old. The verse says, for they took on a great vow. What was the great vow? That was this pact that they agreed that anyone who doesn't join them is considered from the enemy forces. What does it mean they all took a vow? But the idea is that a cherem is a form of a vow. Over on the other side of the Jordan, almost by the Ammonite border, there was a city called the city of Yavesh Gilad. And the city of Yavesh Gilad, they didn't send representatives. They would not partake of this war. They had a very close relationship with the tribe of Benjamin, as is evidenced later on in Tanakh. And they would not partake in the war against the tribe of Benjamin. And so the Jewish people had taken a pact that anyone that would not join the war is going to be executed as well. So they were chayav misa shneimaz. The verse says, "Ashalo ala Hashem begomer mot yumat." They said, "Whoever doesn't join the war against Benjamin, from our perspective, he's part of the enemy. He's part of Benjamin. They will be killed too." Tedalecha. So here you see the power of the pact. They made a cherem. They made a pact. And after the war, what did the Jewish people do? They did an accounting. They realized that the people of Yavesh Gilad did not partake in this war, and they sent soldiers and they killed out the city of Yavesh Gilad. Tedalecha, you're talking about Jews killing Jews. You know, when Gush Katif happened and people were saying, never in Jewish history did such a bad thing happen. A Jew lift his hand against a Jew. I laughed. I said, you know, these are people who never read Jewish history. You know, throughout our Jewish history, unfortunately, we've had situations where Jews killed Jews. Here's a classical story. We had a civil war. We killed out almost the whole tribe. The Jews wiped out the tribe of Benjamin, and then they went down and wiped out the people of Yavesh Gilad. So those who were doing the killing were in the right. But to say that a Jew never lifted a hand against a Jew, that's not Jewish history. Tedalecha koach hacherem. Come, you want to know the power of this cherem, the pact? Bo urei mishaul ben Kish. Come and see from the story of King Saul. Shecherim sheyatzum kolam mikatan v'ad gadol. King Saul made a cherem. He said, no one's allowed to eat. We're fighting this miraculous war, and we're winning. So no one's allowed to eat anything today. Everyone has to fast. Shenemal's, the verse says, they were finally successful against the Philistines. They had the Philistines on the run. So Saul made a cherem. King Saul said, no one's allowed to eat. Everyone has to continue chasing after the Philistines. It just so happens that when he made this pact, his son Jonathan, his son Yonasan, was already out there fighting the war. He didn't wait for everyone else. He went ahead and he was winning the war single-handedly. So he didn't know about this cherem. He didn't know about the pact. Shenemaz, the verse says, Aru reisha sheyochal lechem. King Saul said, cursed it is anyone who eats bread today. V'yonatan lo shama. Jonathan didn't hear the pact. V'achal me'at dvash. And Jonathan, when they came into the woods, he ate some dvash. What is dvash? Correct. Dvash is anything sweet, including sugar. So they had sugar cane over there, and he ate sugar. So you're right. Dvash ordinarily means honey in modern Hebrew. But Rashi explains in Sukkah and elsewhere that dvash could mean anything sweet. So over there, it's talking about sugar cane. So they came into the woods. Everyone was hungry. They were on the chase. And he sees sugar dripping from the sugar cane. He dips his staff in the sugar, and he eats. He drinks some sugar. And then his eyes shone because he was famished. Shnemal, as the verse says, his eyes lit up. King Saul suddenly sees that the tide is turning. The Philistines are, instead of being on the run, suddenly they're chasing the Jews. He said, wait a second, how come we're suddenly losing the war? We were winning, we had them on the run. When he suddenly saw that the tide turned, he said, wait a second, someone here broke the pact. Someone here ate today. He saw that any time a tribe would do a mitzvah, so then their stone would shine up. And when a tribe sinned, so then that tribe, their stone would dim. So he looks at the breastplate, he looks at all the stones. He sees every stone is shining, except for his tribe. King Saul looks at the breastplate and he sees his tribe, the tribe of Benjamin, they had all 600 people left after the war with Israel. So his tribe, the tribe of Benjamin, all 600 men, someone over there messed up. His stone is dimmed. So he drew lots, and the lot fell out on none other than his family, him and his son Jonathan. As the verse says, Jonathan and Shaul, they were the ones that the lot caught. So King Saul said, I know I didn't need anything today, so if it's either me or you, son, it's you. And he drew his sword to kill his son. He said, we made a pact. We said, anyone who eats today will get killed. You ate, you broke the pact, you get the death penalty. Shneimal's the verse says, King Saul said, I swear that God should punish me if I don't fulfill the pact. So the Medrash is showing us how powerful the pact is, that when Shaul made a cheirem, Shaul said, even if it's my own son, I can't go against the cheirem. And so he drew his sword to kill his son. Amru lo ha'am, and then the nation said to King Saul, Adonenu ha'melech, our master the king, Shgagai, you can't kill him. He made an honest mistake, Jonathan. He didn't transgress the pact. Ve'ikrivu alav korban olah, and they said, over an error like this, he can gain atonement with a sacrifice. Let's bring a sacrifice and let's gain atonement that way. Don't kill him for breaking the pact. He wasn't here when you made the pact with the Jewish people. And so the Jewish people donated a sacrifice al shigigato over Jonathan's error, v'netalo, and God forgave him. Ufda'u mimavet, and they were able to redeem him from death. Shneimal's the verse says, v'ayivdu amet Yonatan v'lo mit. The nation was able to redeem Jonathan and he wasn't killed. But you see the weight of the pact. The second King Saul knew there was a cheirem, he said, I can't forgive even my own son. There's a cheirem. And this all is a discussion of the cheirem, coming off of the discussion of the cheirem, the pact that the brothers made, that no one would reveal to Yitzchak what happened, the sale of Yosef. So we saw over there that God said, once the brothers made a cheirem, once they made a pact, even God said, I can't go against the cheirem. So the Medrash said, okay, you want to understand how powerful a cheirem is. And it gave us these two examples, and now we're up to the third example. And the third example is Hakutiyim. Who were the Kutim? So the Medrash explains, Einan nechshavim negoy mishivim umot. Really, they're not one of the 70 nations. Ela miyeter chamisha, Goyim chashuvim lamelech shenemar vayeve melech hashum mibavel umikuta. They are really a conglomerate of five nations that the Assyrian king brought into the land of Israel when the Assyrian king conquered the northern 10 tribes and exiled them. He brought from five nations, he brought people to inhabit the northern part of Israel. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Osip Od Aleihem Arba Goyim. Rabbi Yossi says there were another four. There were a total V'chulam Tisha Goyimim. They're a mixture of nine different nations that were brought to inhabit the land of Israel when we were exiled. Shenemaz, the verse says, Dinaye V'afalsat Chaye V'gomer. He proves it from a verse in Ezra. U'kshegalu Yisrael Mimkoman Mishomron, when the Jewish people were exiled from the north, that the capital was the city of Shomron, Shalach ha-melech et avadav v'oshiv otam b'shomron la'alot mas v'amalchut. So the king sent his servants, and he brought in these people that they should pay taxes from the land of Israel. So what did God do? He said, you're inhabiting the land of Israel with foreigners. Shalach bem ta'ayot. God sent lions to attack. We don't usually have lions in the land of Israel. I haven't seen a lion all the years I'm here, except for in the zoo. We don't have lions. But God sent lions. And the people couldn't walk the streets. They'd be killed by the lions. The verse says, they started inhabiting the land of Israel and they were attacked by lions. So they started doing research. How did the Jews live here all the years? And they found out that there were never lions in the land of Israel. So they realized this is unnatural. So they sent emissaries, they said to the Babylonian king, Adonenu HaMelech, our master, the king, Haaretz Sheshlachtanu Aleha, Einam Kabelt Otanu. This land, the God of this land, isn't accepting us here. This isn't working. We don't number enough people here. If we'd have enough people, then the lions wouldn't be here. But it's not inhabited enough. The king called in the elders. He said, what did you guys do about these lions? He called in the Jews. And he said, all the years you guys were living in Israel, you Jews, you didn't have a problem with lions or any wild animals attacking. And now the land isn't willing to accept these people I brought in. So they said, you know what? Maybe if we give him good advice, he'll bring us back to the land of Israel. So the elders, they gambled. They said, Adonenu HaMelech, our master, the king, Haaretz Ahi, Einam Kabelet Goy She'Eino Nimol. You know, the land of Israel, they figure we got to give them a real tough one. They said, the land won't accept people that are uncircumcised. They figure they tell him that, no one's going to accept that, so then he'll have no choice, he'll bring them back. So the king said, okay, give me two circumcisers, give me two Jews, and I'm sending them back. Everyone's getting first circumcision. If that's the key to keeping them there, no problem. I'm the king, I say what goes. And not only that, I want them to teach them Torah. Because obviously it's not only about the circumcision. If they want to live in the land of Israel, they got to know the Torah. And you guys, I'm the king, what I say goes. So no one wanted to volunteer. But the king said, I said so. And so two people were sent. So they sent Rabbi Dustai and Rabbi Zechariah. And all the Kutim, all the Shomronim were forced to circumcise. The Assyrian king heard this is the key to letting them live in the land of Israel. He said, gentlemen, I'm the king, you're all getting circumcised. And he sent these two rabbis, and they circumcised all the people, all these nine nations, for circumcision. So these two rabbis, they taught them Torah, and they rewrote the Torah in their language. Ubochim. And as the rabbis taught them the Torah, they wept. They wept. What are we doing teaching Torah to non-Jews? They realized that they were opening a Pandora's box here, as we saw later. The Kutim came and attacked us when we re-entered the land of Israel. They claimed they were the chosen people. They were the Jews. When we tried to rebuild the temple, they would constantly send people to destroy the temple. And they were the ones who sent word back to the Persian king that if he lets us rebuild the temple, then we'll only rebel against him, and we're plotting a rebellion. And then Ahasuerus came to power and said, no more building the temple. And for years, for centuries, they were troublemakers. They caused real problems to the Jews. So as they taught them the Torah, they realized that they're really causing a problem here, and they wept. And these nations, they said, we could do both. We could be good pagans and good Jews. We'll do both. So they kept the Torah and they kept their idol worship. As the verse says, they feared God and continued worshiping their idols. And when Ezra came up from Babylon, together with Zerubbabel and Yoshua, the high priest, V'itchilu bonim beichal Hashem, and they started building the temple. Shnemal, the verse says, Beidain kamo zubavel boshatiel v'gomer. So the verse says, they started rebuilding the temple. Uvau aleim ha-shomronim la-milchama, 180,000. So these people, the Kutim, they amassed an army, 180,000 men, almost a quarter of a million people, and they attacked us. V'chi shomronim ayu? Why are they called the shomronim? V'alo kutim ayu? They were Kutim. Why do we call them shomronim? El al-shem ayu shomron, nikhu shomronim. But because they lived around the capital of Shomron, so then they got the nickname shomronim. Ve'od shebikshu l'arog Nechemiah, they wanted to kill our leader Nechemiah. Shneimar, the verse says, lechav nivada yachdav bakfirim begomer. So there's a whole story about how they plotted to kill Nechemiah then. Ve'od shebitlu melechet shamayim shtei shanim, and not only that, they were successful in hindering us, stopping us from building the temple for 2 years. Vayad shnat hayovel. So it hit the Jubilee year, and we had all this trouble from them. They were trying to kill us, they were attacking us, they fought us. So what did Ezra and Zerubbabel and Yoshua do? They gathered all the Jewish people to the temple. They brought 300 priests, u'shloshmot tinokot, and 300 children, u'shloshmot shofarot, and 300 shofars, u'shloshmot sifrei Torah biyadam, and each one was carrying a sefer Torah with 300 sifrei Torah. Vayu took in, and they blew the shofar, valvin mishorin, and the Levites sang their song, umzamrin, and blew their instruments, umenadin etakutin, and as they did this procession, 300 trumpets blowing, 300 sifrei Torah being held by the pure children who learned the Torah, 300, and the Levites are singing, and then they pulled out our secret weapon, and they made a chirim, they made a nidui, they made a godly pact against the Kutim, umenadim et akutiyim, besod shem amforash. And while all these horns are being blown, they declared with God's hidden name that they are banning, they are ostracizing, they are placing a nidui, a chirim on the Kutim, uvichtav enichtav al aluchot, and they wrote it on tablets, uvichirim betin alion, uvichirim betin atachton. And they joined the heavenly court in this chirim, shelo yochal adam yisrael pat kuti ad olam, that a Jew will never eat non-Jewish bread forever. That's it. They're not going to be a part of the Jewish people, the Kutim. Mikan amru, kol ha'ochel pat kuti, kilu ochel besar chazir. And so our sages said, anyone that eats bread from a Kuti, it's as though he eats pig, flesh of the pig. Valiit ge'er adam Kuti. And they made a pact that they will not accept any ger from the Kutim, then lem chelik b'tchiyat ha'metim, and that when the dead are going to be resurrected, they're not coming back. Shneimar lo lachem v'lanu livnot bayit l'elokeinu. Lo ba'olam zeh v'lo ba'olam haba. And in this chirim, they were able to kick out the Kutim from the world to come as well. Ve'od shelo yelem chelik v'nachala b'Yerushalayim, and they instituted that the Kutim would never be allowed to have a portion in Jerusalem. Shneimar, as the verse says, v'lachem en chelik u'tzedaka v'zikon b'Yerushalayim. V'shalchu acherem etzel Yisrael shebebabel, and they sent this pact, the written pact, out to Babylon. V'odosipo alem cherem al cherem, and then they added another cherem against them. V'osipo damelech kosh v'kava alem cherem olam, and Koresh instituted an eternal cherem against them. Shneimar, as the verse says, v'elad yishakan shmei tama v'gomer, as the verse says in the book of Ezra. And here, the Medrash seems to say there are all kinds of practical applications, implications to the cherem. In truth, in halacha, we discuss another level, and this is a phenomenal halacha that people are unfamiliar with, and that is that the rabbis of a generation can get together and decide that a group of people are removed from the Jewish people. Meaning these Kutim at some point underwent a kosher gear. These Kutim became Jews. And then we discovered that they were kidding us all this time. They had a figurine of a dove that they were worshipping, and they just kept it hidden from the rabbis. For centuries, the rabbis had discussions, where do we treat them like Jews, where do we treat them not like Jews? And at some point, the rabbis figured out that deep down inside, they're still pagans. And they realized that they were doing things improperly, and so the rabbis removed them completely, declared them not Jewish. King David also did that. The chief rabbis of the period can get together and say, these sinners, these group of sinners, have gone so far that we declare them not to be Jews. phenomenal. You know, a Jew could never leave being Jewish. Once a Jew, always a Jew. He could never leave. But a group of Jews, if the rabbis see that this group are unfitting, they could remove them. But the Medrash doesn't say that that's what they did. The Medrash says they said no one's allowed to eat their bread. It becomes like pork. They said we don't accept gerim from the kutim. They said they don't have a portion in Tchias HaMeisim. Wait a second. If they're not Jewish, then why would we think they have a portion in Tchias HaMeisim, right? They said they don't have a portion in the world to come. If they weren't Jewish, then why would we think they'd have a portion in the world to come, right? So you see here, it seems to indicate that at this point, in Ezra's point in time, they did view them as Jews. And even so, they imposed this halachic ostracization, this cherem upon them. So this medrash needs a lot of work. Exactly what were they doing here? So obviously these are Kabbalistic concepts, bringing 300 Kohanim, 300 Shofros, putting a nidui in heaven, a nidui down below, 300 kids, the Levites singing, saying God's hidden name. But as we know, Midrashim are an encasing for Kabbalistic concepts. So here we're touching the encasing, and obviously we don't know what's behind it, but that's our learning of Medrash Pirkei d'Rav Elezer, and this brings us to the conclusion of the 38th chapter.